Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, Alarmy, before we get started, we wanted to make sure you heard the big news. The Alarmist has joined Patreon. Patreon subscribers will get access to our content ad-free, as well as our aftermath post-interview discussion and final verdict. We'll also be putting out additional bonus episodes and other fun stuff. Here's a preview of Guest Alarmist, where I step aside and let a guest walk us through a personal tragedy, and together the Alarmist crew figures out who's to blame. This month, Alex Paul discusses the Beverly Hills hotel heist.
The promise of a free vacation.
There, that's good.
I mean, like that.
Nothing in this world is free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in this world is free. And that's what kind of made us dig deeper, is like, we had no money. We were broke. This seemed like a little fun opportunity, and we could not let it go. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to happen. We couldn't just be like, no, we're not, Peter. We're not on the reservation. Goodbye. Turn around. We were like, no, like, this is our one little freebie fun thing. Like, we should have it.
It's like maximizing, like, on sales, you know, when there's an offer, you can't let it go.
Yes.
You can't let it go.
Yeah. I know I can't let it go. And apparently Alex also can't
let it go. So easily. I love letting offers go. I love when offers come along and I'm just like, Not going to take it.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift, the ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing, and that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today, we're discussing the Joan Crawford and Bette Davis feud. Here's what you need to know. Joan Crawford and Bette Davis are A-list actors from yesteryear, whose intense rivalry would have had Twitter of today on fire. People were obsessed with how much these two women hated each other. And although it was true that they weren't best friends, they didn't really interact that much and only worked together later in their careers. However, they each represented a different type of Hollywood star, and it may have been the stark contrast in their looks, personalities, and performances that made their rivalry more engaging than their impressive individual careers. Joan Crawford was born Lucille Faye LeSueur in 1904. She was a classic beauty and often played traditional leading roles, an object of affection for her male counterparts. She was one of Hollywood's highest paid actresses in the late 1920s, and later in 1937, she was dubbed Queen of the Movies by Life magazine. Shortly after that, however, Joan's fragile Hollywood stock started to fall, and a younger crop of women took the silver screen by storm, and none more impressive than Betty Davis. Born Ruth Elizabeth in 1908, Betty Davis first cut her teeth on Broadway before moving to the West Coast in the late 30s. Her unique features and knack for playing offbeat characters distinguished her from traditional Hollywood actresses like Crawford. Davis developed a reputation for portraying darker, more sardonic women, and by 1938, she had earned 2 Oscars for her performances in Dangerous and Jezebel. Joan, on the other hand, would have to wait until 1945, when she would win for Mildred Pierce. The rivalry between the two stars is believed to have begun in 1933, during the premiere of the film X-Lady. Betty Davis's star was quickly on the rise, and this film would be the first where her name would appear above the title on the marquee. Crawford decided that the opening of this film was the perfect opportunity to announce her divorce from Douglas Fairbanks Jr. This news was a splashy headline for the tabloids, and the publicity stunt well overshadowed the X-Lady film premiere. 2 years later, Davis landed a role in the film Dangerous, opposite Franchot Tone. There were rumors that Betty and Tone had a real-life romance behind the scenes, while Crawford and Tone were romantically linked as well. Crawford married Tone shortly thereafter. Although it's not certain if there really was a love triangle, it was catnip for the press. The Hollywood trades often wrote about the mutual animosity of Betty and Joan, but when asked directly about it, neither woman admitted any real hatred. For the majority of their careers, they worked for separate studios and didn't interface with each other much at all. But in 1943, Joan moved from MGM to Warner Brothers, and the press had a field day imagining the two women on the same lot. One rumor stated that Davis had a Coke vending machine installed in her dressing room to spite Joan, who was then married to the president of Pepsi and on the board of directors. The two women finally shared the screen together with Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, a story about a disabled former actress and her deranged sister. It was a comeback movie at a time when both actresses needed it, and the relationship between the sisters mirrored the public perception of the rivalry. Rumors flew again, the most enticing being that there was real physical violence during the fight scenes. But there's plenty of documentation that the shoot was mostly professional, if a bit icy on set. Baby Jane was a box office success and proved beneficial for both of their careers, but Davis received an Oscar nomination and Crawford did not. In the end, Anne Bancroft won for The Miracle Worker that year, but couldn't attend the ceremony, and in a dramatic twist, Joan Crawford accepted the award for Bancroft. This gesture was salt on the wound for Betty Davis, and although it was fairly standard for actors to accept awards for other actors, it finally provided the tabloids with a solid, unambiguous act to prove the feud between Betty Davis and Joan Crawford was real. Fun facts, aka death stats. The 1962 film Whatever Happened to Baby Jane was Betty Davis and Joan Crawford's only movie together. Betty Davis was the first person to ever be nominated for 10 Academy Awards, 5 of them being consecutive. Her last nomination was for Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Joan Crawford was nominated for 3 Academy Awards and won Best Actress in 1946 for her performance in Mildred Pierce. Davis won her first Oscar in 1936 for her role opposite Franchot Tome, the very same man who would go on to be Crawford's husband. Davis was the first woman to serve as president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, although her tenure only lasted for 2 months. Davis starred in the drama film The Star, which is a loose depiction of Crawford herself. For her work in The Star, Davis scored an Oscar nomination in 1953. Joan was also nominated that same year for her performance in another film, Sudden Fear. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is friend and actor Emily Pendergast. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. We're so excited.
I'm so excited. I'm nervous.
Oh, fun.
Perfect.
I just, so our listeners know, Emily is an outstanding actor, mm-hmm. one of the funniest people out there.
Alive,
probably. Yeah. Joan and Betty Davis would have been
mad.
So yeah. mad about it.
Yeah, yeah.
At a third one. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you can check her out, all over at the Groundlings. She's always performing, and she's got a new animated series coming out on Adult Swim. So everyone get excited. Just get excited.
Please
right
get
now.
So excited.
Emily, we start off the show by asking our guests, what's alarming you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Oh, how much time do you have?
Mm. An hour. Oh, less, preferably, actually.
And we do need to talk about Betty and
other
Jones,
things. So, okay. So I think that gives you a minute.
Okay, perfect. And I've already taken up so much time.
Yeah.
You know what? I will say, really bad drivers have been I've been getting hot under the collar about it.
I relate to that.
Yes. In the last week, I have driven by someone eating something so steamy in their lap while they're driving.
Whoa.
'Cause like I thought it might have been a fajita. And like that amount of steam. And then I saw someone cutting their bangs on the 101.
No.
And I
on the 101.
On the 101.
That's insane.
Oh my God, that's not okay.
No. It's awful.
For the record, the 101 is not a stoplight. It is a highway.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that's pedal to the metal and bangs. You're looking at your bangs.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
on the
so
list
Hollywood.
Of 101 ways to get into a car accident.
Bada bang.
Yeah. Bada boom. Yeah. Smashing in right into that fender.
Yeah.
Yes,
so I think,
exactly.
I think that's what's alarming me. That's,
yeah.
I don't like that.
I'm with you. I think that's dangerous and mm-hmm. not here, right? Alarmy. The alarmy knows none of them would be caught.
No.
You pull over to trim your bangs if you're
that's
an
alarmist.
That's right. If you're an alarmist.
That's right.
It's on in our
car. Or to eat your fajita, your steamy fajita.
Why can't that wait? You got to find time to do that.
Yeah, wake up 10 minutes early.
For crying out loud. Jeez. Heck's wrong with you people
well,
out there.
I mean, that is the perfect transition into this Joan Crawford and Betty Davis feud, because what a car crash that we couldn't stop looking at.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What is that called when you're on the highway and a car crash happens?
Rubbernecking.
Rubbernecking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We are the rubberneckers of this feud.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Great. I love that segue. It's perfect.
It's great.
Good job.
I'm known for terrible ones, so this one's I feel really
stellar.
Confident about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You nailed it.
Yeah, thank you. but seriously, these two women, I mean, what a lasting feud they have contributed. They are
well known. We all know Bette Davis. We all know mm-hmm. Joan Crawford. In fact, we know their names. Do we know their bodies of work?
I have to admit, I did not. Clayton, you did?
Yes, Joan Crawford. I watched Straight Jacket when I was young with my sister, and she was like really incredible in that. And I've seen Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which is like the iconic film that they were both in together. Mm-hmm. And you kind of know of like the legend of them as like these big former Hollywood actors, you know?
Yeah, I have to also admit, I didn't know their body of work either.
I think I didn't know their body of work really, other than just their names and like their... I honestly couldn't even remember what Joan Crawford looked like, but that. Well,
and in fairness, old movies are boring. They're in black and white. They're rarely in color, and there's no exciting like monsters or like Jurassic Park
or like special effects. There's is no what good, you're talking like, about. Yeah.
But there was that song.
Car, like
she's
car
got,
crashes.
She's
like
got Bette Davis eyes.
Yeah.
Right?
So
you knew her
that.
Eyes were going to be great. If
I
knew that.
I did know what they looked like, but if not, I'd go, that's Bette Davis.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Look at those peepers.
Yeah.
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 She's got a hell of a set of eyes.
Hell of a set.
Both of them, not just one.
They're beautiful.
Sometimes you're like.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Joan Crawford had, we should have listened to her in the 90s, in the early 2000s, about she had gorgeous eyebrows. Why were we all plucking them so thin? Gorgeous.
We steered away from Joan Crawford. And,
are we back
and a whole
on big
generation?
Are big eyebrows back? Up.
Big eyebrows have been back, honey.
Cool. Very happy for big eyebrows. And
so if you never plucked them thin, you've always been in style.
Yes.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was in Mommy Dearest?
Well, that was Faye Dunaway.
Great.
Portraying Joan Crawford, which is like
portraying
also
Joan Crawford.
Okay, yes. Okay, that's, yes.
Yes, that's right. The connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you, so Clayton, you have seen Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Yes, it's been a while, but yes.
And Chris and I made Chris watch it with me.
Mm-hmm. This morning, after I was traveling for the week, it was my nice. First time together, and she turned it on before I could ask her how her week was, stuff like that.
Yeah. First thing I did was turn on Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Yeah. 8 a.m. Set the tone for the morning.
Set the tone for the morning.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I'm not a huge black and white movie fan.
You just haven't seen the right ones.
No, exactly.
I know. And you know what? I need to start rephrasing that because I recently watched Casablanca and I was like blown away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Blown
sure.
away. Yeah.
So maybe I'm changing. We're allowed to change here.
Yeah.
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane might be one of my favorite new movies.
Wow. Oh. See, you should watch more black and white films. You should watch Straight Jacket.
I'll have to put it on the list.
With the young Joan Crawford.
Slow down, Clayton. Okay, slow down. I need to spend a little quality time with her first
She'll
off.
She'll learn about your week later. Watch the movies.
Thank you, Emily.
You're welcome.
It's a fantastic film. I almost, every thing I read and every podcast I listened to about Joan Crawford and Bette Davis was gives you a little breakdown of what the movie is, but they never want to spoil the ending, so I had to watch it in order to find out what the ending is, and it delivers.
Yeah,
and we're not going to spoil it, not on this podcast.
No, but we recommend to anybody definitely.
I also like
it.
That you don't want to give a spoiler on a
movie from 100
years. It's 1963. Yeah.
You haven't had the chance to get out and see it yet. We won't
spoil
it.
We're not going to spoil it for you.
I think they're going to.
But just if you don't know, so the premise of this movie, it's important to understand. It really, I don't know what came first. It's like one of those chicken or egg things. Is it the feud or the movie dynamic? But the premise is, it's two sisters. One was a big star, Baby Jane, and the other was kind of in the sidelines. Her name is Blanche, played by Joan Crawford. Baby Jane is, of course, played by Bette Davis. And later on in life, Blanche has a career of her own, and she becomes a bigger star than Baby Jane. And
outshine,
then
sure.
outshines her. There's an accident that leaves it leaves Blanche in a wheelchair, and then you cut
at
to
the care of her
at
sister.
The care of her sister. You cut to, you know, 50 years later, or maybe not that many years, 30 years later, and these two women have been living in this house together. Baby Jane is caring for Blanche. There's jealousy, and it just goes from there. And boy, does it go places you didn't realize it could go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I would venture worth the watch.
I would venture to say that it's a good, legit, just good movie, but I would venture to say that the years of tabloid gossip only added to the kind of like aura around the movie of, oh, these two feuding actresses finally in a film together, and they're playing like real adversaries. Like, it's very like life imitating art kind of storyline, you know?
Totally. We should just put it. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and they were like in the fight to like, get rebirthed into coming back to, so like, oof, that pressure.
Yes.
I know.
It felt very like the sister version of Grey Gardens.
I was just gonna say it's Grey Garden vibes for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And I feel like we should start off by putting that movie, that iconic movie, up on the board, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Sure.
Because like I said, although the feud had already started years before, some people have theories about it starting during the premiere of Ex-Lady, Betty Davis's big movie, and then Joan Crawford announcing her divorce. It started then, but this movie was the one thing that really made it very real for the tabloids.
Sure.
Yeah, they had tangible proof. Slap it on the board.
Slap it up there.
We've slapped.
This is from a Harper's Bazaar. Davis agreed to sign on to Baby Jane on two conditions: that she play the title role of Jane, and that the film's director, Robert Aldrich, assure her that he was not sleeping with Crawford. Quote, "It wasn't that I cared about his private life or hers either," Davis reportedly said. "I didn't want him favoring her with more close-ups." Eye on the prize. Eye on the prize.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Hollywood, right?
So Hollywood. This is from Vanity Fair. "In the interview that I had with her, Betty Davis actually expressed some regret about how she and Joan ended up, which was fascinating to me," continued Ryan Murphy. This is in an interview about his show feud. "I have always had a wistful dream that Betty and Joan could have watched this together. I think that my favorite line from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is at the end of the film when Jane tells Blanche, 'You mean all this time we could have been friends.'"
Ooh-wee.
That's.
And I almost gave a spoiler, but I didn't.
I saw it. Great edit.
Yeah, you did catch it. Good job.
Yeah. Good job. We're not going to give away spoilers.
No,
It's been 50 years. I'm pretty sure this movie is 50 years old. Yeah.
I think note to self though, if you find yourself in a feud, or if suddenly people are gossiping that you're in a feud, you should find that person and say, maybe we could just be friends. Like maybe just check with them and realize, and then maybe you're not in the feud.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Okay. I like
hit
that
it
too.
Head on.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Could so much time's wasted with poisonous thoughts. Go to the source.
Yeah,
so
true.
I
should have been
that.
Around.
I love that. Do we want to put up on the board something in this line, which is like, you know, people like to think that what they see on the movies is real.
The confusion that movies are fake.
Yeah, like people not knowing that movies are fake because, you know, when they see. I think a large part of this, and I'm sure we'll get to this, but the tabloids had a field day with this because they were just such different, they played such different characters in the movies. And so we believed, or the viewing public believed, that they were just like their characters. And so they must hate each other because they're both doing such completely different characters and they have a different sort of approach to their work. And if the characters aren't like each other, probably the actresses aren't either.
So what do we say? Is it like not life imitating art, but like art imitating life?
Do people think that movies are reality shows?
Well, maybe, or maybe we say also, maybe the just good acting. Maybe they were just such good actors that they believed that they were like that in real life, like their characters in real life.
They were too good.
Because even there were a lot of people saying, you know, like they're even just their interview styles. Like,
yeah,
you know, Bette Davis was like more crass and like just like could shoot the shit with you a little bit in those interviews. And Joan Crawford was a little bit more like, I don't know, I don't want to say put together, but you know.
Their
personas, in which like they had to be like owned, let's talk about that.
Yeah,
by the studios as well.
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah.
We put like leaning into the narrative, or like do you feel like they were leaning into this narrative that because of the press?
How about this? Let's start with putting up Hollywood's there can only be one mentality, because I think that goes into the competitiveness that Emily was pointing out, that the studios own them, right? And then the fact that they had to compete against one another for these roles. And obviously Hollywood is all about competing for roles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there can only one person can play one role, but it felt like at this time, because they were owned by different studios, all of a sudden that pool of movies was much smaller, because we couldn't be part of the Warner Brothers. You can be signed by Warner Brothers and do MGM movies and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And also I feel like the leading lady pool was so small because they had so few, there were so many more roles for men. So like, it's really the competition, like the percentage or margins or however you want to say it, is like so much more intense for for female actors than it was for men at the time.
Mm-hmm. True. This is from Vanity Fair. In Betty's time, the Hollywood power brokers really knew how to pit these women against each other so that they had more control over them. They couldn't afford for women like Betty and Joan to join forces. Patriarchy. Ooh. Put that up on the board.
Yeah.
In that time, women always aligned themselves with the power, which meant they aligned themselves with men. They saw other women as threats. I mean, that to me says a lot.
Yeah. Mm.
They couldn't afford for Betty and Joan to join forces because they were they were so powerful. And the idea that they could join forces was such a threat to the men who ran this business. That they would rather set a culture of competition, you know, pinning all these women against each other. I mean, this is why women do need to unite.
Right.
I so agree. And I think, too, is that even like a marketing draw, too, for a movie like this? Of like, come see it on the screen together, you know?
Right. These feuding stars.
Yeah. But
yes, it actually was. And interesting enough, here we go. This is this will explain things. This is from Crime Reads. Publicly, both stars downplayed the rivalry that the press seemed eager to foment. Hmm. Just before shooting started, Hedda Hopper arranged and she was a big publicist at the time. Hedda Hopper arranged a dinner at her home for the two movie queens, which she diplomatically called stars of equal magnitude. Crawford assured her that there would be no discord. As she told Hopper, very few story properties for stars like this come along. Of course, everyone expects us to clash, but I'll be so-and-so if I'm going to fight. Warner's seeming munificence in distributing the movie after rejecting the project initially was not entirely for old time's sake. Rather, he saw it as a calculated gamble, since he would still collect a hefty distribution fee without assuming the greater capitalization risk. Davis recalled the studio head's reluctance. Quote, nobody could see the electricity of putting those two old broads in the same picture. The old broad's appellation displeased Crawford, and she asked Davis to refrain from using it. If the apprehensive studio chiefs no longer had confidence in older actresses' ability to sell tickets, then Aldrich,
Davis and Crawford would have to rely on the film's tantalizing subject matter and the star's aging fan base. So just to clarify here, the studios, I'm not exactly sure, but my understanding is that the movie was produced by Seven Arts and another production company. So that they actually retained the stars, Crawford and Davis retained a percentage, or would get some kind of bonus if the movie did well. So it was to their advantage that not only they kept this feud alive for publicity reasons, but so that to sell more tickets. Mm-hmm. So it makes you really think, was this even an actual feud?
So I feel like from that, it's like, definitely like them embracing the narrative. I also feel like there's some ageism going on in there, mm-hmm. which perhaps influenced this potential feud. Mm-hmm. And then there's also just like the ticket sales of it all.
Yeah, like capitalism. Some dark marketing.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like dark marketing.
I love that. I love it. The Oscars. Okay, so we should discuss the Oscars event.
Okay.
After the movie came out, Crawford was not nominated for an Oscar.
Right.
Betty Davis was nominated for her performance as Jane, mm-hmm. Baby Jane. And what Joan Crawford did was go to the other actresses who were also nominated and offer to accept their award if they won and couldn't be at the Oscars.
In fairness, the reason she did this was because she was kind of snubbed. Like, she kind of expected to be nominated that year, and it was like a hit to her and her public image that she wasn't nominated. So she said, okay, so in lieu of that, I would like to present, which she got a chance to present another award, I think, and also accept on the behalf of if somebody couldn't be there, in which case this happened, that was Anne Bancroft. Mm-hmm. I think that the modern viewer sees the like cringiness of it more than the sort of viewer of the day, because I think it was more common practice for this kind of thing to happen. Whereas if we did see it today, it'd be like very, very awkward.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, not your award, buddy.
I can't believe somebody's not going to the Oscars.
I know.
Yeah, what the heck else
this
are you doing?
This is your one shot.
Okay,
so here's a spoiler. Here's a spoiler from 1964.
Okay.
And this goes with put up Oscar dramatics. We should call this the Oscar dramatics.
Yes. Okay.
This is from the New York Post. Davis was favored to win, but Bancroft's name was called. So Anne Bancroft won for Miracle Worker. And Crawford grandly accepted. So apparently Anne Bancroft, I think, was on, I don't know, Chris, can you look up why Anne Bancroft missed the Oscars this year?
Yeah. Probably filming something else and assumed she wasn't going to win, would be my guess.
Or pregnancy. That's what I heard. On pregnancy leave? I don't know. Davis told the LA Times, quote, "I almost dropped dead when I didn't win." In her 1987 memoir, This and That, she elaborated, "Moments later, Crawford floated down the hall past my door. I will never forget the look she gave me. The look clearly said, 'You didn't win, and I'm elated.' The rule of thumb was that an Oscar winner usually added at least $1 million to the box office receipts of a film." Davis later said, "Since Joan and I each had a percentage of the movie, how Medean, how foolish she was to work against my winnings. The studios wanted more, of course, and the women signed on for 1964's Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte." Crawford left less than 2 weeks into filming, claiming illness. Most agree she simply didn't want to be upstaged by Davis again. Joan knew she didn't have the acting chops to do the part. That was according to Davis.
Yeah. What do you think about, man, if they just had like a therapist to talk through some of those feelings?
Sure.
Yes. No therapy. No friends therapy.
No. Of just going like, hey, can I just vent about this? You know, some sort of just
a mediator of sorts.
Yeah, mediator, just that mental health aspect.
I think that's a good point. I think we should put that up on the board, because this was a long lasting feud, and just so many years of that really eats up at you, right? Yeah,
because also Joan had every right, I think, to be really sad and disappointed that she didn't get nominated. Of course, that's like real feelings.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And on the flip, like if Betty, if you weren't nominated and she was, I bet you'd be a little ticked.
Right.
Too. But yeah.
You know, something my therapist said that pertains to this, and I've said this before, you should always look at the people who you really hate. And it's usually one of two things. You either see something that you really dislike about yourself, sure, in the other person,
mm-hmm,
or you see something that you see as a fault of yours, like something you can't get or achieve in the other person.
Yeah.
Or something you wish you had. That's what it is. Something you wish you had in the other person.
Absolutely. And I think there might have been a lot of that.
I'm trying to think about I'm going back to this concept of like the studio heads kind of engineering this feud because they didn't want them to unite. And I'm trying to think of like modern day feuds. And I just feel like I keep coming back to this idea that when you see stars today, it feels like actors really like champion each other's work. Like there's not like a go-to, oh, of course, like these two actors like hate each other. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And I feel like there's something about this, like, I don't know if it's like of the time, but like how unfortunate that these two really like big successful actors like weren't like the choice or narrative was that they were like competition versus just like contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to really encapsulate that, but that it's like, I don't know, maybe it's just like of the time, or was the coercion by the studio heads that like kind of made them buy into the narrative, you know? Mm. Like, was that manipulation? Like,
yeah. Well,
I don't know.
I think, Rocky, you said like patriarchy too, about all, and it's like, because several male leads were like equal parts in
right,
films, and there was never like, oh, they hate each other like this. And it was like, it almost just like makes me like, ugh. Like it's that thing of like, well, these two women, they surely can't have enough pie of the pie. Like they just have to only one, you know?
Yeah. And
so yeah, it feels like the studio's facilitating that only adds to it for sure.
And to add to that, maybe we call it Hollywood's treatment of women aging, mm-hmm, like aging women.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's a biggie.
So this is from the New Yorker. Women in Hollywood at the time were either actresses and therefore either objects of desire or bit players or behind the scenes ancillaries, script supervisors or makeup artists or costume designers or even sometimes screenwriters. These women's work was essential to the making of movies, but only a part of another creator's worldview. This is from Slate. And for most of its history, Hollywood has been run by men, and movies are as a work of both art and commerce, a medium that plays on fantasies. And the men who run things fantasize about having sex with young, unspoiled women.
Not
women who are the age and have the maturity and life experience of their own wives. This is part of the story. But if it was the whole story, stars such as Crawford, Davis, and Barbara Stanwyck would never have survived on screens for as long as they did. And both Davis and Stanwyck were able to work even longer than Crawford because in 1970s and 80s, they successfully transitioned to television. These female stars stuck around because they didn't just appeal to the male gaze. They inspired fantasies in women, and they were able to continue to do so long after male producers and male viewers had moved on to fetishizing the new crop. They did this by modeling to women a way of being that many viewers could not have pulled off in their real lives because it would involve not giving a shit what men in their lives were to say or think. This was something Crawford was very aware of. Quote, "I can tell you one thing Betty and I had in common," Crawford said after she had retired from movies. "Our roles put men off."
Hmm.
Oh.
So it's almost, yeah, it's like, do you blame America's, like, we weren't ready for the, like, boss, like, the boss actor yet, like, the boss female actor yet. Like, we were too sexist to, like, embrace that or something. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think Hollywood has to go up on the board, right? Sure. And they're, and just, like, literally their treatment of, mm-hmm. of women.
Right. And
after a certain age.
Right. And, you know, not only do you, if you're a female actress at the time, have to deal with male studio heads, male directors, male cameramen who are all writing scripts, and male writers who are writing scripts that either sexualize you in some way or create this sort of their own fantasy version of you that you have to fulfill. You also have to deal with a sexist, you know, press who pits you against other women in your field. And so you don't even have the repose of like having like an ally among women. So,
and to add to that, a sexist audience.
And a sexist audience who expects you to be a certain way. And I think these two women, what's so incredible is that they both fought against that in their own kind of unique way. And that just backfired because they became sort of more, you know, they became these sort of...
The attention went to their feud and not to their work and their power.
Right.
And because they were like, they could be these like trailblazing people that they would have been so much more powerful if they got together. If they were allowed to get together too.
Right. Imagine seeing them like hand, you know, like arm in arm, like we're a powerhouse, like try and come for us.
They couldn't even feed off of each other's like energy of fighting, battling against sort of the tide.
Right. Cause didn't like they would, it's like studios would make the actresses like go like so blonde, you know? And I remember hearing something about, I think Betty Davis like stopped going that blonde. You know? Yeah. And like that was like her being like, and I'm making a name for myself. You're standing up for herself. Little things. And because they did have wonderfully different personalities, God, they could have, that makes me sad. They could have done so much.
Yeah.
You know what they didn't have, which it sounds like, I feel like there was a glimmer of this in something you were reading earlier, Becca, is Betty Davis like came from the East Coast, so maybe not to like put it back on the ladies, but maybe there was some like snobbiness about like East Coast versus West Coast, like legitimate actor, you know, training.
I thought of that too, Clayton. I mean, maybe it's the Broadway thing. She came from Broadway, did Betty Davis?
Yes.
And Joan was
so maybe
sort
she
of
just yeah she thought she was better through... than Hollywood.
Oh, I like that. Oh, yeah. Put that up. Mm-hmm. I was gonna read a few of these quotes that they said about each other because they're so terrible.
Okay. Wait, are they real?
Yeah, they're real quotes.
Oh, like are they from later interviews or what are they from?
They're just like from, you know, quotes from the media and the tabloids, but they were real.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's see. It's under my section I called, "If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all."
Sure.
Okay. This one I found at Harper's Bazaar. Much of their fighting played out as back and forth snipping in the tabloids. Though Crawford was always less openly hostile than Davis, those whose iconic burns include the classic, quote, "Crawford slept with every male star at MGM except Lassie."
Jeez. Oh.
Wow. I mean, that's really good. That's good. Let's see. Okay, here's a quote from Crawford aimed at Davis. "Miss Davis was always partial to covering up her face in motion pictures. She called it art. Others called it camouflage, a cover up for the absence of any real beauty."
Wow. Golly.
Nasty.
Ouch.
And they hate each other.
Okay, this one is from Davis, Betty Davis. "The best time I ever had with Joan Crawford was when I pushed her down the stairs in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane."
Oh. I would just love if they were like secretly best friends behind the scenes. Same. And they really were just like, let's just really go all out for the public, you know? That's what I want to be true.
Yeah. Davis, Yeah, yeah.
I was just gonna say, it is that thing too, you know, if you get told something enough or you hear it enough, like you do start believing it or it like becomes part of you.
Oh yeah. Well. That's, I wonder if it's just something that they heard or they thought manifested. They should do. Yeah.
Right. Do we put that on the board? Manifesting
animosity? Manifesting animosity? Like
Yeah, like what would that be? Is there like a psychological, like what is that?
Well, it is, some people do thrive off of conflict,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm not one of those people. I
Me
don't.
Me neither.
Yeah,
maybe Clayton? Do you like it? You like conflict?
The conflict. There's certain ones I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to get into this. Other times I'm like, no. Back to like Emily, what you're saying about bad drivers. I'm like, I will honk my horn at that. I love that conflict. Same.
I like that. Yeah.
But that's brief. That's also like dangerous to do nowadays. So maybe we should.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. No, road rage is real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible that they just weren't adverse to it. Mm-hmm. They were okay with it. And maybe, for instance, Davis has been quoted in by her biographer as saying that Crawford had no sense of humor. I noticed poking some fun was a good attention getting device, and I was never adverse to getting a little extra attention. So it was something that she kind of enjoyed.
Don't they just kind of seem like really eccentric, old, like just like Hollywood stars? Like I just feel like you don't get stars like this anymore, and I feel like they really kind of leaned into it. So maybe that was just like a relic of the past that we won't get again because Hollywood has transformed. But like, it's kind of wonderful that they were so like egotistical and so large, you know, like, and they just kind of like were like, like so nasty to each other, and I'm the best. And I mean, you kind of have to, I guess, if you're in that male dominated world and you're like the like best female actor in it, like you probably do have a deserved chip on your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that the right term? Chip on your shoulder.
So we could put that just as sort of like the sexism chip on the shoulder of women at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I would say.
Yeah.
And still, oh no, we fixed sexism in Hollywood. Did you guys know? Yeah. No. There was an article. Yeah.
There was one article.
Vanity Fair. And it was one. So it's over now. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats to you guys.
Rebecca and Emily.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God. We're just learning about it now. This is great. Is changing. Yeah. Emily, I love you. Yeah.
I love you so much.
Wait, what is this called though? We're calling it what chip on your shoulder? Sexist chip on their shoulders?
Sexist chip on your shoulder.
Okay.
On their shoulder.
On their shoulders.
And you know, I wonder like when it changed and what changed. And it's not like a 100% of the time, you know, but because it's like, I remember I was reading a book that it's about like a Hollywood starlet. And it was like, you know, she helped like this one woman. And it was like, why are you doing this? Like, people don't do this, mm-hmm. you know? And I wonder, like, it's that thing of just like, why, you know, why was that just a known thing of like, you don't climb up and then reach your hand back down. Like, you should not do that. Is it like they don't, maybe just like job security or something, they didn't feel safe.
Yeah,
I kind of like job security.
Job security is great.
I mean it's really
what it is crass, is it's job but... insecurity. It's job insecurity.
Job insecurity. For women in Hollywood.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, women in general anywhere, because I mean, the list goes on and on. Why did women put up with so many things in all fields of a business for so long? But it was like you couldn't afford to either lose that job or who knows.
Well, it's also like, why is it that when a woman has a sort of, women have an approach where they're like throwing elbows in order to, you know, get job security in this case. But when a man does that, it's like seen as like, oh, he's industrious and like he's a go-getter and he's
cutthroat. This is double standard.
Right.
Yeah, double. Oh, put that up on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there is something deeper going on as well. for these two women. And it's I was going to call it the pressure of self-preservation. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I really do think that it kind of goes back to their childhoods too, how they mm-hmm. were, how they grew up. This is from Vanity Fair. Crawford was born dirt poor in San Antonio, Texas, to a mother who never wanted her, didn't like her, was physically abusive to her, explained Jessica Lange. Her father left before she was born. She was mistreated her whole childhood, was involved in a sexual relationship with her stepfather from the time she was 11.
Jesus.
Okay, I believe God. That's called sexual abuse.
That's rape.
Rape Vanity Fair.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not a sexual
that's
relationship.
Not involved no. In sexual
no.
Relationship.
Okay. Okay. Jesus. And was farmed out to schools supposedly to get an education, but really as a little workhorse. She said herself that she never got anything beyond a fifth grade education when she arrived in Hollywood. After a short-lived dancing career in Chicago led to a screen test for an MGM executive, she said that MGM was the only family she ever knew. They taught her how to speak in that very artificial mid-Atlantic accent that has nothing to do with her upbringing. Mm. She was determined to be a lady. When she married Douglas Fairbanks Jr., she used to study his stepmother, screen star Mary Pickford, and how every fork was placed. She worked hard. She was ambitious. She wanted this. She worked at it. And when she achieved stardom, she protected that entity, that product, Joan Crawford, like a she-wolf.
Mm. We should put MGM on the board. I feel like they, when we talked about Judy Garland, it's the same kind of thing, how they just like turn people into like these workhorses.
Yeah. And Warner Brothers while you're at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
They make them have that persona that they have to, you know, they change their names and everything. And it's, I mean, they're just like, they're a source of marketing or like, you know, just like, that's awful.
Idea that, you know, she came from such she had such a difficult time growing up. And when she finally achieved this success in her career, there was no way she was going to let it go down, you know?
Yes.
Right.
I get it.
And you get protective of it because,
And Davis had a similar experience. This is from Vanity Fair, a different article. Much of Davis's life could be seen as a rebuke to her father, Harlow, a stern Harvard-trained patent lawyer whom she could never please. Quote, "I sat in a reverie staring at the stars. The sky was silver with them," she wrote in The Lonely Life. "I was bewitched. Daddy was sitting with me. Do you see all those stars up there? There are millions and millions of them. Remember that always, and you'll know how unimportant you are." That's a quote from her dad.
Jeez.
Thanks, Dad.
So, oh my God. She had a similar experience. Her dad left her family when she was a kid, like 7. Her mother raised her and her sister in poverty. I believe they lived in New York City for a while. So, difficult childhoods where they were seeking this kind of approval from
all the more reason to connect and lean on each other.
I know it's so sad.
It's so sad. Wow.
Should we put abusive fathers on the board? They're both abusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Let's do it. You'll never hear me say no to putting an abusive father up on the board. Yeah.
There's always room.
Always room.
Mm-hmm.
We are running out of time here.
Okay.
And I feel like we have a pretty good board.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Who's to blame for the Joan Crawford and Betty Davis feud? Whatever happened to Baby Jane? Being too good at acting? Hollywood's There Can Only Be One Mentality? Patriarchy? Dark marketing? Embracing the narrative? Ageism? The Oscars dramatics? Lack of friends therapy? Hollywood's treatment of aging women? Hollywood's excessively male culture? Hollywood and audience sexism? East Coast versus West Coast acting snobbery? Manifesting animosity, sexist chip on their shoulders, job insecurity, double standards, the pressure of self-preservation, MGM, Warner Brothers, or their abusive fathers. And note, we are leaving off Joan and Betty Davis, and I think that that's right. I don't think these women deserve to be blamed for the feud.
No. I agree. I don't think so. If anything, I would put them together. I wouldn't put them individually.
Yeah, because from what you've said, they took shots were had.
Shots were had.
Yeah.
I mean, unless we're saying that
they used it as a powerful tool. Right, yeah.
As a tool.
I mean,
in which case it was a good thing.
It could
I
be
think that's
also
my hope. But
yeah, I'm with you, Emily, that at the time they were like, I feel so powerless. And they just kind of like, took hold of that power of their mm-hmm. own power and
right.
created their own narrative.
Because any press is good press. And so they leaned right. into the dramatics.
I mean, the fact that we're still talking about them and there are other actresses of the time that we're not talking about as much says a mm-hmm. lot.
Yeah. And the idea, too, of I don't think women at that time were getting a lot of the attention in the movies either, too. So it's like what you were saying, Chris, of like any press is, you know, or bad press is like whatever. That's a great quote.
It's great because it's memorable.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's
you really made an impression on Emily.
It's easy to say.
That's why it's so good. Yeah.
So that thing. But so they're like, at least we're being talked about.
Right.
Yeah. If they don't, then would they be quote unquote interesting to the public anymore?
Would they be forgotten?
Mm-hmm.
It's still happening, and it's such a fear for women to mm-hmm. feel like after a certain age you're right. going to be overlooked or forgotten, and who wants to feel that way? And men don't get it. Men don't get it.
No. You know what's amazing about all this too is that I think when you like in the intro we just describe how Joan Crawford was like worried about or being replaced. And she was kind of like the competition was Betty Davis, who was only born 4 years earlier or later.
Yeah.
Like the difference.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, she's like this old aging star and this like 20 something year old comes right. along. They're 4 years apart in age.
Yeah.
and they're already worried about aging out.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a question, and Chris, maybe fact check this guy, but sure. Didn't Betty or Joan Crawford went to Betty Davis with this movie, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's how that worked. Yeah.
And so that also goes like, hey, let's give them what they want.
Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, take that power back. And it's exactly. Like, it's just sad that the power is a feud.
The feud. Yeah.
And not right. Their awesome talent.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Or their friendship.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
They're like BFFs.
Mm-hmm. We need to come back. Like, this is how we can do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we still haven't knocked a single thing off the
board. Nope. Okay.
Can we combine any?
Yes.
Yes.
We can fold things in for sure.
Yes.
Like there's a lot of like Hollywood stuff. So maybe we can put that into one big Hollywood or something.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we can fold whatever happened to Baby Jane into the Oscars dramatics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we're missing one big one, which is just the Hollywood tabloids.
Ooh.
I just don't know how you can leave those out because they were the ones that were fueling the feud for so long.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe dark marketing can go into that.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. Sure.
Dark marketing. And then
I think we can take being too good at acting off.
Yeah. You can't blame people's talent.
Yeah. No.
You're just a good actor.
Ageism and Hollywood's treatment of aging women.
Oh, right. I think ageism could be folded into Hollywood's treatment of aging women. Yeah, it's more specific.
Yes.
Hollywood's excessively male culture folds into the patriarchy or vice versa.
Yeah.
Hollywood has a unique, disturbing brand of sexism, I think.
Yeah.
And patriarchy.
Well, because it's so powerful because we're creating stories. We're feeding the narrative to a cult. We're inspiring cultures, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So stories are powerful.
Maybe roll patriarchy into Hollywood's excessive male culture as opposed to the other way around.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's what I'm seeing. It's like, just in this case, it's more specific.
Hollywood specific, yeah.
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 I feel like this lack of friends therapy is like, it's such a small, I mean, I think it'd be good for them, but like, it's so small compared to what's actually going on.
Yeah, right. That didn't cause it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right. It would have helped, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I think, Emily, you were saying that we should take out Hollywood and the audience sexism.
Did I say that?
Oh, okay, okay. No.
I was saying Hollywood sexism can fold into Hollywood tabloids.
Oh, okay.
Because I think that that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. I think
the sexism also rolls into male culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So then let's do that. Do we roll like MGM and Warner Brothers into the accessibility male culture then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Because it wasn't specifically either one of them.
Right, it was pretty like across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me what the double standards was that for men and women?
Yeah.
Would that go
but like fighting your way to the top kind of thing, how like who like one was viewed as like toxic female, another one was like a go-getter guy.
And the job insecurity falls into the Hollywood's excessively male culture too, because it's the women who feel the insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. And a chip on their shoulders too. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's the sexist chip on your shoulders. I mean,
it's part of
all
the
of these things will give you a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
The manifesting animosity, would that go in? Where was it?
Oh, maybe embracing the narrative.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fold that into. Okay. Okay. I like that.
I think we can cut. There can only be one mentality. I mean, there's plenty there, but there's also like they were in separate studios, so they weren't competing for many jobs.
That's true. Until they were in the same studio eventually later, but that didn't last a very long time.
Right.
And that feels kind of like manufactured by like tabloids and like the machine, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the Hollywood machine.
I think the East Coast versus West Coast acting snobbery can go also because there's just not enough documented proof that there was that kind of, I mean, it's clear that Betty Davis had chops and like, she was like,
she was
don't sleep on Joan Crawford.
I know. I love Joan Crawford.
I know. I look, she's just my kind
really good.
of
of actor. I like Betty Davis. Right. Joan Crawford doesn't do it for me, but I've only seen
You should see some more Joan Crawford.
I got to watch more Joan Crawford. I do.
I think Joan Crawford is, I mean, clearly, obviously, in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, she's the more subtle of the two acting, you know. Yeah,
I think if you see other roles of her being like, then you'll appreciate the way she would acted in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Okay, Clayton.
Just saying,
okay.
Just saying.
Just don't spoil anything for me.
Yeah.
No, tell us what happens in any of the movies.
The Oscars dramatics feels kind of after the fact to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't, if we could just take it off and I don't have to fold it
that in. Would, yeah. As I said, it also could go into the embracing the narrative.
Sure,
of it too.
Sure.
And I feel like the abusive fathers can somehow fold into the pressure of self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, because.
Yeah.
The on the one hand, Betty Davis was desperate to prove herself, you mm-hmm. know, to her father.
And on the other hand, like, you have no support. Clearly, they come from a family.
Yeah.
A life without support. Uh-huh. So.
Yeah. And both feeling that just stark isolation, too. And just doing it on my own kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's got to be hard. So, we're left with five really good ones. Embracing the Narrative, Hollywood's Treatment of Aging Women, Hollywood's Excessively Male Culture, the pressure of self-preservation, and the Hollywood tabloids. And I'll tell you what I'm leaning towards is, because I feel like the Treatment of Aging Women folds into the Excessively Male Culture. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a different world if we had more, especially at the time, if there were more women at the head of these studios.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I love to see all ages of women.
Yeah,
across it's the board, important. Especially those that are my age. And I'll tell you what, we're all different ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah.
Representation matters.
Yes, please. Mm-hmm.
So I'm leaning towards sending that to the alarmist jail and slapping the pressure of self-preservation. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like now that I said that out loud, maybe not. Maybe we don't slap that. Maybe we slap embracing the narrative.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
You like that?
I do like a slap on that. But I don't know.
But are we condemning it if we slap it?
Yeah.
Is it like embracing the narrative or like feeling compelled or like forced to embrace it? Like maybe it's like they had no other choice kind of thing in order to stay relevant. Maybe that's kind of like the angle.
Which also, how you just said that, Clayton, makes me think that you can almost fold that into the tabloids.
Right.
That feels in like.
Yeah, it's almost like if we were to say embracing the narrative gets the slap, it would be a pat on the back and it would be our way of rewriting the history in order to kind of like make it so that these two women did this for the publicity and used it to their advantage, I think is what we would be saying, which I'm down for that, but it sort of, it just flips the, it doesn't quite fit in terms of this, the podcast format, right?
Okay, well then we give it the big clap.
Sure, we can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that gets the big clap, and then we slap the tabloids.
Okay.
Okay. Do we like it? We're all.
I think we like it.
Okay, great. I'm gonna call it "Embracing the Narrative." Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, you're getting the big clap. The Hollywood tabloids, here comes the big slap. Hollywood's Excessively Male Culture, you're going to the alarmist jail. We fixed Hollywood.
We did it.
Guys.
Good job, guys.
It honestly wasn't that hard.
No.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And it wasn't even that bad, right, Emily?
No. And it's all perfect and fine anyways.
Well, yeah. I mean, sexism. There's no sexism anymore, so.
No.
Yeah.
Now Hollywood's perfect. Wow.
Fixed. Clean.
If only we'd started this podcast sooner.
In 1933.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been great.
That's my big regret.
Yeah, you know what? We should go up on the board. We should have been up on that board.
On that board.
Get us up.
Emily, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of this iconic feud.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this podcast. And I was so nervous that I was like, I don't know how to fix this. And we fixed Hollywood.
And it wasn't that hard.
No.
Easy, Chris.
Kind of easy, yeah.
No, I told you to be easy.
Oh, take it easy.
In the aftermath, Bette Davis managed to leverage the success of Baby Jane and would remain a Hollywood icon until her death in 1989, working in film, television, and showcasing her big personality on late-night talk shows. Crawford, on the other hand, seemed to regress in her career, admitting that after Baby Jane, she only took roles for money or out of boredom or sometimes both. In 1978, Joan's adopted daughter, Christina, wrote a scathing memoir about Joan called Mommy Dearest, where she depicted Joan as an abusive alcoholic. Surprisingly, Davis lent her voice in sympathy and solidarity with her co-star, stating, "I was not Miss Crawford's biggest fan, but wisecracks to the contrary, I did and still respect her talent." The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey, and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing The Toxic Lady, the mysterious death of Gloria Ramirez. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.